This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next up, Eyes Wide Open with Janessa and SJ. Let's bring them on to reintroduce themselves, the show, and what's up for today.
Eyes Wide Open. We are multifaceted beings living in a multidimensional existence. We hold the power of perception, and this power alone paints our reality. Perception influences the things we see and the things we don't see. Together, we'll explore the mystical and the material, the metaphysical and the physical, the supernatural and the concrete, and the seen and the unseen. And you know, once you see something, you just cannot unsee it. Hi, I'm your host. I'm Janessa Finley Ford. I'm an empowerment coach that went from supervising felons to marrying one. And the story is not what most people think. If you haven't heard those episodes, go back and listen to the beginning episodes. You'll hear my story. And that experience, which was one of the most challenging I have lived to date, is what saved my relationship and liberated my spirit. And I now empower people to heal their relationship, addiction, and injury from the criminal justice field. We have been plugging along here in this series on my solo episodes about the unseen aspects of the systems that we live under. And I definitely do speak about this from the structure of the United States and the history of the United States. But for all of those listeners out there in other countries, hopefully this gives you some things to consider and look into within your own countries as well. Because as many of you know, the United States did not establish itself all just like out here on an island. There's so many influences and connections to other countries that actually some of this history is going to also be a foundation for some of the systems within other countries out there, especially with the movement toward a transnational approach to the world and life. So we'll get back into this in just a moment. I do want to start us out, of course, with a funny story. Who doesn't want a good laugh in the middle of their week? I know I do. So this past weekend, I had the privilege and honor to go spend some time out on the farm where I grew up. We actually had a family reunion, and I had not been able to make it to our last reunion. I was in a wedding that weekend. So moral of the story here is it had been nearly a decade since I've seen many people within my family. And I do make it back to the farm here and there when I go back and visit my parents, but to really spend time on the farm in nostalgia and reminiscing, I usually am not there that long enough to really stroll down memory lane. I had the opportunity to do so this weekend though. And so one point to ponder when you reflect on your own childhood, what are those magical memories that light you up? And have you spent any time embracing them lately? There is something so blissful about that energy and those feelings that made our childhood just magical and memorable. And so if you are maybe just struggling a little bit this week or feeling like you're blah and mundane, take a moment and find your own amazing nuggets from your childhood and just embrace that energy. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. It will definitely give you a pickup and raise your vibration if that's your goal. So as I got to walk around the farm and think about my childhood and what it was like growing up there and just being there in the peacefulness of the farm, I mean, it's miles and miles. Honestly, it's hours from any city, but it's miles and miles from any teeny tiny small town. And the farm has evolved over the years, naturally. And I was looking at what used to be a hog lot, so where we raised the pigs when I was on the farm. And it's no longer that, but I was envisioning how the farm was back when I was there, and we had two chicken coops that are no longer there, and we had a little shed that had an abundance of parts for that day that something broke down. And you don't want to drive all of these hours to a city to get parts. So that was gone. But anyway, the hog lot. I'm sitting there and I'm staring out at this fenced-in corral that has a lot of weeds growing in it. And I'm not even sure what it's used for, which is not even important. But I was reminiscing of opening the gates for Dad as he would drive the tractor and the grinder. The grinder grinds up corn and makes the pigs feed. He'd drive it into the corral and fill the feeders up for them, and the clanking of the lids, and just all these sounds and thoughts and visions that take you back to a certain age and a certain time. And then I remembered one of the things that I really enjoyed doing on the farm during the summertime was taking the pigs to town, so to speak. So when we would sell the pigs, you know, it would be to John Morrell or some processing company. We would load them up in the trailer and haul them into town, get a little quick trip off the farm in the summertime when I didn't have school. And of course, when I was in school, I didn't get to do this. So it was just something that was a little change of routine. I really enjoyed doing it. And when we would unload the pigs into the like John Morrell, the company, where they would just corral them and hold them until the semis came through to load them up and actually take them to the processing plants, there would be, you know, various different corrals within these buildings. And the one time we were unloading the pigs, and because the guy needed to adjust some of the gates so that the pigs could go into the proper corral, they were just in this front holding area. But of course, all the pigs are coming off the trailer, because who wants to be smushed in a small little trailer space? And I'm standing there, I'm standing inside the corral, and more pigs are filling the area. And so I couldn't move, actually. If you imagine this corral that's now smushed with all the pigs pushing themselves off of the trailer, but yet can't go into their holding corral. So they're just in this tiny intermediary space for the moment. So it's just a space jam-packed with pigs, and there I am standing along the edge and not able to move. Like, the pigs were of no harm. Like, they weren't going to hurt me. However, one of the pigs' bladder was really full, and it decided that it was not going to have a full bladder anymore. So as this pig starts peeing down my leg, and as I mentioned, like, when I said I couldn't move, I really, really meant there was no room or space for me to go anywhere. So I could not really abort mission or jump out of the corral. We were packed in there like sardines, and my sock and my shoe just filled with pee. It was so amazing. These are the just glorious little pleasures of being raised on a farm. So then I got to drive back home, which was about 20 minutes probably, with my sock and shoe full of pee. So just in case you ever wondered, it's truly better to be pissed off than pissed on. But you maybe are in that space of not feeling very chipper. Hopefully you can recount some of your own magical childhood moments to lift you up in the middle of this week and bring you to a place of just magic and harmony and peace and joy. What was your favorite thing to do as a kid? All right. Without further ado, let's jump into our topic. I've been getting great feedback from people about previous segments and systems I've talked about and talking about them in a way they have never considered or thought about before. For instance, one of the recent episodes was about the political system, and I talked about how masculine and feminine energy played into the parties as we see them. And that was really intriguing for some people. I got some great feedback from that. And as I mentioned, as we were kicking the show off, they have said since they now see that, they truly, truly cannot unsee it. It's such a thing, right? And life is that way. We can live along in our programming and perception of the world, and something can occur that switches the filter through which we see the world. And once that filter is switched, when it is truth, when you know in the depths of your knowingness that it is fact, truth, reality, you just simply are not able to unsee it anymore. That is the main goal of this series, is to help people understand the influence of centralization of power, the effects that it has on the people, how power really is structured and asserted within our societies and systems, and to give people some different insight to things they may have not researched or thought about before, because so much of our history that we learn in school is not the comprehensive history, actually, of how things came to be and how they are the way now they are now. And I for sure want people to start critically thinking through what they're seeing in the world versus just assuming what they're being told at the surface level is reality. Excuse me. So we have covered a lot of systems to date, and we are going to get into the monetary system. Who doesn't love money, supply, banking, currency? We love having the things as humans, don't we? The material things, they bring us such comfort. And then also, if we're being honest, there is power attached to who has the most amount of money. And the things, there's an acceptance, keeping up with the Joneses, that saying. Part of our consciousness, which is also a big part of this whole series, talking about how all of these systems actually influence us to be, as some people would say, asleep, to remain unconscious, to not think. And a big part of consciousness awakening is that we don't actually need the things to survive. We move beyond that root chakra necessity of survival and things to a higher level of knowingness that it's always going to be provided. We're always cared for. Building in this belief system that the universe is always working on our behalf is a phenomenal, phenomenal belief system to have in place that will move you to a higher level of consciousness regarding how you view material things. And I certainly can attest in my personal path along this year in transitioning from my full-time job into my business, my husband's incarceration, living the scenario that we are currently living, having life turned completely upside down from what it looked like last year. I had it in my mind what being supported with materialistic things needed to look like. It needed to come through a very specific avenue, and it included me earning and working for everything that I had, which, of course, a farm does such a great practice of building that belief system. And one of the belief systems that really was getting wiped out and rebuilt for me had to do with the materialistic and always being provided for, even when And in addition to the ways that you don't expect it, the ways you don't foresee it to come to you. And I have had more support than what I could have cultivated for myself alone. And this is the power of unity. This is the power of connectedness. This topic of unity is a big, big driving factor of this series, but also what I stand for and what I want to cultivate with my message in totality. In so many ways, we separate ourselves, we label everything. This group of people is this, that group of people is that. There's this label for this, you use that label for those sections of expressions of humans. And at the end of the day, it's all of the separateness that continues to drive us apart. And when we're driven apart, we have less power as a people. And what is being lost at the surface level of wanting to establish respect for the differences of people is that people are looking for unity through separation. And those two opposing forces aren't actually going to bring people together. And that is a way of weakening the power of the people. And so my message here is to really bring yourself into a united state of being with other people, regardless of likeness or difference. That is where we are empowered. That is where we have connection with others. And that's also where we will receive unconditional love that we desire. So that topic has been on my heart a lot lately, but let's loop back around the monetary system and look at, honestly, the history, which does show a representation of people being more united in different ways than what we see today. So back in the days of old, prior to currency, there was a bartering system. And bartering trade is still alive and well in some areas of the world, but it is not the main go-to system for obtaining the things that you need to live a daily life. Of course, barter's trade and trade, for anyone who might not be aware, is, you know, giving 6 eggs for a gallon of milk, perhaps. And it was very, very, very decentralized. There was no one establishing what the value of these 6 eggs or a dozen eggs would be. It was up to each person to feel that their exchange was fair and equitable. And so what that looked like looked very different for everyone because there was no set value system. But there are some limitations in that as well, because if you need something bad enough, it will have more value to a family than the things that are in mass quantity or supply. We see that in our current day as well. Supply and demand always drives the value of items. It's no different in the barter and trade system, but with the barter and trade system not having any regulations, being so decentralized, it was really truly a free-for-all for whatever was exchanged in whatever manner, which has its benefits and it also has its drawbacks. So moving away from the barter and trade system, they moved into metals. So gold and silver being the exchange for whatever the goods being purchased. Now, gold and silver, of course, led to a self-protection issue because if people were carrying their gold and silver around with them all the time, they had value on them. And of course, they could get robbed. And who wants to get robbed? No one wants to get robbed. But it would happen. And also, one other limitation to the metal system, of course, is the weight. if you're going to go purchase something of great value, gold and silver really is heavy. And so you could only carry so much with you at one time. And so this is initially where banks entered the picture. And their purpose was very different than what people would think a bank's purpose today would be. So banks initially entered the picture with just being that safety deposit box type. They were really truly made to store people's wealth and to have that safekeeping place and not actually to lend money. Now, again, this is where I'm going to refer people to Jordan Maxwell because of the Admiralty Maritime Law that is really truly used rather than the law of the land when it comes to monetary system. The Admiralty Maritime Law is deeply, deeply integrated into our monetary system. So if that's not something you're familiar with, look more into that. Listen to Jordan Maxwell. He'll explain it better than I ever could. But Admiralty Maritime Law, in short, is the law of water. Ships, ports, boats, and the water language is deeply embedded into our monetary system. So, of course, banks, the building, like banks of a river, the current, the flowing of the water, currency is how we talk about money. It goes on and on and on, truly. So if it piques your interest, look deeper into that. There's a lot there to come to understand the laws and the structure of our monetary system. So with banks not originally being designed for lending, you can actually look this up if you're interested and you live in the United States and you want to see this for yourself. It's listed in the powers and duties of banks, which is under 12 U.S.C. 1431. That is the law that established banks and what powers and duties banks have. When you look that up, you're going to see that it does not state that banks have statutory authority to lend money. So how did we go from a banking system that's essentially a modern day safety deposit box to a system where people apply for loans at a bank, oftentimes can be denied if their credit isn't high enough, if they can't prove and establish that they can't pay the loan back, and they're stuck? How did these banks go from not having all that much power to finding themselves at the top of the pyramid of power? We have to jump into 1913 and when the Federal Reserve was created. If you want to take a deep dive into the Federal Reserve, the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, is a phenomenal resource for coming to understand how the Federal Reserve came to be. That's a pretty long dry read. So if listening is more your jam, the author of the book is G, as in Greg. I don't know what his actual first name is, but G. Edward Griffin. He, on occasion, will give an interview here and there. You can also find him on YouTube. He is a great resource of information. So in the book, it outlines that in 1910, six men met at the Jekyll Island Club. Yeah, so if you didn't know that Jekyll Island is literally a physical place, it is a physical location in the U.S. The six men who met, hopefully I don't butcher their names, but they were Nelson Aldrich, A. Pyatt Andrew, Henry Davison, Arthur Shelton, Frank Vanderlip, and Paul Warburg. And they met because they wanted to rewrite the nation's banking system, to completely reform it. Now, this had occurred, these attempts for reform, on at least two previous occasions. And Andrew Jackson actually single-handedly vetoed a bill to recharter the banks, which was what they were attempting to do, similar to what happened with the Federal Reserve, so that the banks couldn't centralize power. Isn't that interesting? Now, this happened at a time when people wanted their money and banks didn't have it. Do we see that happening today? Have you guys heard in the news the run on the banks, people afraid of what's happening with the value of the dollar, if banks are going to survive? They want their money, but banks don't have enough liquid cash. Liquid, speaking of admiralty, maritime law, liquid, fluid water. So banks don't have enough liquid assets to be able to give everyone their money in cash. And that creates a problem. And perhaps we don't think about this all the way through from start to end when we hear the debt ceilings getting raised, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. More money is being printed, but there's nothing to back it. So when money's just being printed and we're moving into this digital system where it's just numbers and zeros and commas, is there enough cash for every single person to claim the money that is in their account? Probably not. So if our banks are upside down, so to speak, how does that work? Have you ever thought about this? Have you followed that system far enough? Or have you just always thought a bank is something that you trust? It's insured, you're always going to get your money. It's quite interesting how our banks came to be what we believe them to be today. So at the time of 1913, when the Federal Reserve was created, the result was actually turning the U.S. into a corporation or into a company. And it was ever more clever and disguising in how it was presented to the people. Much of what we saw during the pandemic, of course, also was practiced tactics that they have used for a century at least, if not longer. So we're told there's a problem. This solution is going to fix that problem. We believe in the solution because we're just really being sold the solution for the convenience and the amazingness that it is. And that was the Federal Reserve for the issues with the monetary system at the time. Much the same that masking and separating ourselves was the solution for the pandemic at the time. So just as we did not completely understand at the time the pandemic broke of the impacts that masking and separating would have on us as humans with emotions and feelings and the need for connection and community, people didn't understand at the time of the establishing of the Federal Reserve the implications that system would have either. So the establishing of the Federal Reserve allowed the system to supply, print, and control all of the money, and it actually superseded the government. And we see that on the power pyramid I mentioned in one of the very, very first episodes of the series. And the government is actually the number one borrower to the Federal Reserve, which makes the government controlled by these families who have the power over the Federal Reserve. So the Federal Reserve is not actually owned by the United States or by a government agency. Now, because of the name, a little bit deceiving, right? Federal Reserve. Before I ever started educating myself on any of these things, I naturally made the assumption that the Federal Reserve must be a part of our federal government system, but it's not. So because of the profits and the power that the families have, who, I don't like the word own, but for the sake of a different, lack of a different word, we'll say own, those who own the Federal Reserve, that's their motivation to drive up the debt ceiling. because they don't want to lose their control and influence over the government, because the government needs the money. The government enters into all of these contracts, pays all of its workers. The government has so much debt and necessity for finances to operate that the higher the debt ceiling is, the more secure the Federal Reserve is in having the government continue to borrow money from it. And here we are. Establishing the Federal Reserve also established the cash as we know it today, the monetary system that we still use, mostly use. So the currency, actually, are debt notes. If you look at your dollar bill, you're going to find that it's a debt note. And for people who get confused with debt and credit, I do. I will just remind everyone that debt means something is owed. So if you have a debt note, if you have a dollar, it's actually showing that you owe something. Isn't that the opposite of what we've always been taught? That if we have a dollar bill, we have wealth, we have something. So the other really interesting factor about the Federal Reserve creating this company or corporation is established or verified within Dun and Bradstreet. Now, Dun and Bradstreet is a business database. Every business that's registered is logged and stored and tracked within this database. And Dun and Bradstreet actually shows that there is a trust, and that trust, like a trust fund, a trust, that trust is called In God We. I'm pausing here to let you guys think about this just momentarily, or to go grab a dollar bill or Google it. If you're in a different country, you can Google the American dollar bill, and you're going to see at the top of the dollar bill, it states, In God We Trust. Now, we have built this nation believing that we are a nation of believers in God. We trust in God. Actually, if you look in Dun and Bradstreet, you're going to find this trust that's called In God We. That is the trust of the United States, which means that's where all the money goes, is into that trust, or through that trust. It's operated through a trust, which makes the United States a company or corporation, not a country. Isn't that a little bit different story than what you've always been told? So then if we have a dollar bill, that makes us the debtor, that we owe the amount that we're holding in our hand, versus owning, having ownership of the amount that we hold in our hand. Now, I'm walking you guys into this slowly as I can, because I know that this flips everything you've probably believed about our financial system completely upside down. But I do want to take this deeper in the next solo session I have regarding what is called a legal fiction or a straw man, and how the system, the way that it's actually constructed, is incredibly profitable for families that, we'll just say, families that seem to be highly wealthy and profitable. And I'll get into that more when I talk about that legal fiction. But for today, what I need for you to understand is that there are trusts. But I don't know if I thought before the U.S. Treasury held all of the money, or the money was actually at the physical bank that I went to. I don't know what I thought. I don't think I ever necessarily thought it through all that far or deeply, to be honest. Like, I'm really fascinated by human nature. There are aspects and topics I think we're all this way that we're drawn to and we find particularly fascinating. And those specific topics are topics that we want to go much, much deeper into and understand much further. I can tell you that banking, finance, investments, those topics were not it for me for many, 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 many years. And the only time that it did become a topic for me was really when I started digging into understanding what Jordan Maxwell was talking about. When he depicted all the different signs and symbols on the dollar bill, what they meant, tied it all together, talked about how there was a trust and the U.S. was a company and corporation, it was mind-blowing to me. But there was also something in my soul, that deep knowing of knowingness, that I knew I needed to know more, and something there was real, and it deeply resonated. And as always, of course, please do your own research and draw your own conclusions. Listen to your innate wisdom. But for today, please begin to think and challenge, could it really possibly be so that our country is a company or a corporation that's every company and corporation is intended to make money? So when you see where the government spends our money, start viewing it as an investment. Where they're spending money, what initiatives they're supporting, what agendas they hold, when you stop looking at it as spending, because there's a lot of surface level angst and emotion around the spending of our tax dollars. If you view it in the perception that the government is making investments for our country to gain future profits and the return on investment, the ROI, does that start making more sense about why our money goes to places it goes when it doesn't seem to make sense on the surface? Why perhaps money goes to various different international places while domestically there are many, many needs for people, such as the train derailment and the whole toxic situation that happened recently in Ohio. As I was following that, and I didn't follow it all the way through to the end, so definitely research this on your own to confirm, but in the beginning, there was not being federal money given to our own people domestically who are paying the taxes while money is being sent to different countries and war efforts outside of us. When you look at that as which option has a return on the investment, it makes a lot more sense as to why the money was sent to the places it was spent. And this is a big factor for, from a political standpoint, to jump back just briefly to last solo 2 weeks ago topic, why one of the biggest issues for me personally within our political system is what representatives are going to keep us out of war. Who is going to unite us? Who is going to keep peace? Who is going to use the money to support the people and liberate the people versus make things really profitable for the families who are invested? So for instance, in World War II, I talked about how Henry Ford invested money, if you will. He sent engines to both sides of the war. And so he had these contracts. He's making a ton of money within his business. And there was no losing because he was providing both sides of the war, if you will, with what they would need to be able to fight that war. And there are a lot of companies in the U.S. that make ammunition. I mean, there's just so much profit to be made off of war for a very, very small, select amount of people. And war never unites the people. There's so much fallout, and that's from a physical standpoint. When you take that even deeper to the trauma, the pain, the generations to come that experience the loss that these people who are actually living through it, the soldiers who are sent, who come home with PTSD forever changed, unless they have amazing energy psychology, alternative modality tools at their disposal. It is such a deep, deep wounding to the people as a whole. War for profit is not something I personally can stand behind. Okay, so we've gone from how the Federal Reserve established cash. Now, let's fast forward a bit to pretty much current day and take a look at how banks are siphoning money off of the people over time. And credit cards are a great, great example of this. So if you have $50 in cash and you spend that $50, the business or person that you spend that money with receives all of the $50, right? And as long as that cash is being passed, they get the full cash or debt note, right? But when we use a credit card, we'll just say 3%. There's a percentage rate that's taken off the top. So the first time the $50 is spent, let's say you buy $50 worth of groceries at the grocery store. At that 3%, $1.50 is taken and sent to the credit card company, which is owned by a bank, of course, right? And then the next time that money is spent, another 3% is taken off, which isn't quite $1.50. Like, it's going to be reduced a little bit every time, but we'll just say $1.50 every time it's spent for the sake of simple math. So you can see, as the credit transaction is made each time, the bank gets a percentage of it. They're getting money for simply having issued a credit card and having a credit card processing system, while the business that it's the money's being given to has that money taken off the top of their profit. Of course, this affects you because businesses will mark up their product to cover that expense. That expense, while on $50, doesn't seem like all that much, but when all of their purchases, or the majority of them, for every month or every week, whatever, is made through credit or debit transactions, and they're consistently giving this 3% to the banks, it dilutes the power of the money. And so on the opposite end of that, you are paying more to get less, and the banks virtually not doing anything, but they are getting money off of every single transaction, every single swipe, every single tap. And we also see the convenience, right? The push for convenience. It's faster, it's easier, there's no counting change, you don't have to carry your cash around with you, like, just swipe. That's like magic money. And there's also profit and benefit, if you will, off of that as well, because people are more inclined to spend money that they don't actually have when it goes on the credit card and they can pay it off later, right? So some people get into worlds of issue with debt and owing money to the banks simply because they don't understand how credit cards work, or they have to eat. You know, maybe there's just not enough money at the end of the month, and so it's feeding their kids and swiping the card. And that's a horrible situation to be in. And that is leveraged for banks to be the ones that profit. It's not about watching out for the people. So as we watch the system shift from gold and silver to just a bank note, we're now watching it trend toward the digital, the credit cards, Venmo, PayPal, Apple Pay, Zelle, Stripe, Square, to name just a few. I'm sure there's far more digital processors out there. And of course, it's all easier and faster and more convenient, we're told, right? But it's also moving further into the illusion of money while moving further away from the definitive, tangible, seen value, which I just talked about with, you know, the credit cards. The same applies for all of these payment processes. There's just numbers and digits, and we can't actually see any value backing the system. Now, there is also this current talk and, dare I say, push for digital banking currency, which also, like, let's be realistic. We live in 2023. Things are not going to look the same as they did back in 1920 or 1950, right? We have to live with the times. But it's also important to know who's really profiting. Is it really the convenience that's worth the changes? Is your convenience worth the price you're going to ultimately pay? So with the digital banking currency, of course, they're telling us how convenient and amazing it is, and of course it's going to be convenient. But if you haven't paid attention to some of the deeper discussions around what the digital banking currency might actually look like, it could look like you only are able to purchase so much of one item. So for instance, one of those items I have heard and seen talked about is red meat, because we want to reduce carbon emissions and cows are going to be a big way of reducing carbon emissions. Now, if you haven't listened to the nutrition, nourish, and hydrate portion of the systems, I would argue that there's a push for plant-based foods, which I did eat plant-based for many years, but many of those foods are made with refined oils, which limit your consciousness, right? So all of these things tie together. This is not a singular conversation of one system. If you take nothing else away from that, please take away the interconnectedness of all of our systems and how things are not just a bunch of random situations playing out like the news likes to portray to us with no connection. They are connected. So the monetary system, if we go digital, could only give you a, we'll call it a budget for how much red meat you could eat in a month, if that's your thing. And if you don't eat red meat, you won't care, but there may be some other allocation you could care about, right? So it's important to look into the deeper aspect of this. And once you purchase that amount of red meat for the month or for the week or however they're going to potentially structure this, then you're just cut off. You can't purchase any more of that. So while on the surface, digital banking currency seems so convenient and so amazing and so nice, how much of your control are you going to be giving up over what you can buy? If there are going to be allocations for different categories of goods consumed. And once you reach that maxed out allocation, there is no more for you to purchase. So please truly look into digital banking currency, critically think through and explore what that's going to look like, what will the ramifications of that be, and understand that all of this began because the Fed managed to take our currency system off of the gold standard. Powerful, powerful stuff that we just go through our life every day consuming, buying, obtaining the material things and not going below the surface to see how is it that we even obtain money in the first place. Now, I do want to go on a really brief little rant, if you will, about money. Money gets such a bad rap. There's so many sayings about how money is evil, and I want to destroy this mindset for people. Money is an energy. It is neither it's neither positive or negative. It's just neutral. Like, money is just a thing, and it exemplifies the person who has it. And this is where the conversation for human nature comes into play, because if good people have money, they are doing really good things with money. And if people who have ill intentions have a lot of money and greed and some of the innate instinctual, what some people would refer to as reptilian parts of our nature come out in those people, or are what the people with money truly are focused on, then we're going to see more and more and more of that with money. But it is not the money that makes the good or the bad. Money is not the root of all evil. Money is an energy. And if you are a good person, you have money, you're going to do really good things with it. And that is why it's so important to get money into the hands of good people who care about people and don't solely care about profit. I'm sure you can tell I could go on a riff about that for a long, hot minute, but I'm sure you get the gist of it. So let that integrate and set in for you and see what shifts with your mindset around money and what you're seeing in the world around you in regards to how money is being utilized. As we transition to the top of the hour and our amazing shameless plug, there's a couple opportunities happening. So I'm going to throw a couple different things out there for you guys. First of all, our next group coaching call for Stronger Together is tomorrow. And Stronger Together is a transformative experience. It is an amazing community of people to where you have instant support, acceptance, and unconditional love. The people in that community make it so incredible. In addition to the community, though, you get to come with the things that trip you up in life and be transformed to move through them with grace and ease. It gives you tools to move you through your daily life situations and happenings in an easier way, in a way that processes mind, body, and soul, so that you don't get tripped up and stuck with the difficulties or the hard that come your way, because life is always going to throw things our way. It's how it works. So the more tools that we have in our toolkit to be able to flow with life through the highs and the lows, the ebbs and the flows, understanding your rhythm, who you are as a person, the deeper you go into that journey, the more amazing things you're going to see show up for you in career and family, in self-satisfaction, in money, profits. People's lives get better and better and better, and they expand and grow in that group coaching experience. Our participants, our members in there literally say it's life-changing. It has changed their lives. And it's not a matter of understanding what we're doing or how we're doing it. It's in your body of knowing. If that's calling you, if you resonate with that and you're curious, now is a great time to jump in there. We are actually focused on the concept of time, because time is one of the things that we need to transcend to be able to integrate new patterns into our lives, to move beyond the things that trip us up. And so often we get very attached to time, and having things arrive at a certain time in a certain way, the time is ticking, there's not enough time, there's so much pressure with time, I'm running late all the time. And we are interrupting all of those preconceived linear beliefs around time. So join us tomorrow evening, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. You can find the link at www.fiercelyradiantsoul.com. In addition to that opportunity, I am still running my Create Your Authentic Relationship one-on-one signature course for 50% off through the end of this month. And it truly is that it allows you to release everything you've been told relationships need to be, that have been influenced by the people around you and your environment, so that they can be authentic to you. And when your relationships are authentic to who you are, you will experience a much deeper satisfaction in your relationships, with so much less tension, so much less bickering, so much less being defensive, having to stand up for yourself in a way that's rigid and inflexible. You're just going to get to be you, and people will accept you, and you will accept people. It's amazing, amazing, amazing thing. You can also find that on my website, www.soul. Click on the Eyes Wide Open tab, and you will see that offer is there where you can link up with that. So thank you for joining me here today. Please come back next Wednesday. SJ and I will be back together live, and we will see you then. In the meantime, friends, keep your eyes wide open.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.